football on off the ball.
One goal isn't going to change the world for him. He's got to back it up. I get it. But I'm quietly confident that that superstar we thought we had is still developing nicely.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Welcome to the Racing Pod with Johnny Ward standing in for the last time for the foreseeable for John Duggan. And JD, like us all, absolutely salivating in relation to the weekend racing. The Fighting Fifth at Newcastle is everything, I suppose, as the Morgiana wasn't last weekend. We have three proper prospects and indeed horses going hopefully toe-to-toe in a race that's not only hard to call but hard to price up. What'll even go off favourite in it? Then you have the old Hennessy at Newbury, and culminating in at the end of the weekend with the best day's racing all year really at Ferry House with the Hatton's Grace to Drinmore and the Royal Bond, and some other really good races on the undercard starting at Ferry House indeed tomorrow. And if you want some Dundalk on Friday night, that's all there as well. It's just a fantastic weekend's racing. Later on we'll be joined by Sam Norris of William Hill, go through the market moves, and that big one at Newbury is very, very open with lots of each way players. But first of all, we're joined by Don McLean. Don writes in the Sunday Times, features on Racing TV, does various other things as well in the racing game. How are you, Don?
Johnny, yeah, all good. And I know you've teed it up well there. What a weekend in store. And I suppose it's the third of these three big Irish racing national hunt weekends, isn't it? When they moved the Navan race to Fortrea Chase to be on the same weekend as the Troy Town, so made that a weekend. And likewise with Punchestown last weekend, the Morgiana Hurdle and the John Durkin Chase, they used to be on different weekends. In fact, the John Durkin Chase used to be in early December, kind of 3 weeks to Christmas, but they moved it back to late November to be on the same weekend as the Morgiana Hurdle. And that's, maybe it was an intended implication of that the big horses, the big kind of Christmas horses, could run in the John Durkin Chase. And that's been the case now for the last couple of years. And as you said, we got a brilliant race there last weekend, and then this weekend, Hatton's Grace Hurdle weekend, the Ferry House weekend. It's always been a 2-day meeting. So yeah, it's just deep national hunt racing wall to wall.
Yeah, if you want some anti-post bets, you're thinking of having a bet for Cheltenham down the line, Don is definitely one of the best judges in the business. And I wanted to get your opinion on last weekend, Don. Was there anything in the Morgiana, I suppose, first of all, was there anything to glean from that? Are we sure necessarily where Lossiemouth might run later in the season? Maybe what happens in the Fighting Fifth will be a factor in that thinking. But I don't know about you, these races with 1-6 shots, 4-runner races, they just don't do a lot for me.
Yeah, I don't think they do an awful lot for anybody, Johnny. That's just the nature of it. It was uncompetitive, Lossiemouth, I suppose. You know, Paul Tannen kept it simple, got her out in front, got her jumping. Her jumping was very good. She was long, I think was it the last flight down the back straight, but she was a 5-1 on shot. She won like a 5-1 on shot should win, like everybody in the market expected her to. I thought Glenn Killen stayed on well. I thought he ran a nice race, and he reappears now as well in the Hatton's Grace Hurdle. Thought he ran a nice race to stay on to take second place, but he was, you know, miles behind Lossiemouth, as you would have expected. And I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think what happens at Newcastle on Saturday will be a greater determinant on Lossiemouth's path and where she might go at Cheltenham, whether it's the Mayor's Hurdle again or the Champion Hurdle. An awful lot depends on Anzadam, how he gets on in the Fighting Fifth, and interest that Paul Tennant's gone over to ride him there. I know we're going to talk about the Fighting Fifth Hurdle, but no, to answer the short answer to your question, I don't think we learned a whole lot from the Morgiana Hurdle, bar that Lossiemouth is fit and well and still as good as ever.
So then on to Sunday, and basically all of the big guns turned up for the John Durkin. Now, I probably wasn't alone in sort of narrowing down the race in the end to the first and second, just by virtue of little things being against some of the other horses, you know, be it distance, hadn't run in some time, maybe this wasn't their seasonal plan and all of that. Now, I watched the race in the press room in Mallow, Don, so I want to get your own take on where you watched the race, what it was like watching it, because there was a bookmaker going by me afterwards who said you wouldn't get the likes of it in a maiden hurdle the way that race worked out. And I was coming down from the high of watching this. I'd actually tipped Gaelic Warrior to end a really bad run of tips, so I was just relieved that I tipped a winner. But take away from that, you'd seen the jockeyship of Paul Townend. I thought it was fascinating to watch. But on the other side of it, like, I spoke to bookmakers who effectively laid, because it was an each way race, they laid pretty much everything in the race. They laid a lot of runners. When you have the Gold Cup winner rated 176, who on his first run since has beaten 52 lengths, and you've Ian Maximus, who's a horse of such ability, beaten 80 lengths, you've the likes of even Leckie Watson, who was the Cheltenham hero last year, beaten 66 lengths, even Faster Slow beaten 30 lengths, and there are absolutely extenuating circumstances. There was nothing done by the stewards afterwards to look at this race. I just don't think the optics are good. If you backed Galloping Deschamps at Cheltenham, and I know the way you're thinking, Beach, and it was the first time you'd bet in the Gold Cup, and then you turn up in the bookies and you see, I don't know the way you're thinking, is 18-1. You think, I have to have a fiver each way on that. There just, for me, there should have been some analysis by the stewards as to why some of these horses were a million miles below their best on the day. What did you think of the race?
I thought it was a hell of a race, Johnny. I thought it had everything, really. Like, of course, the two protagonists, Gaelic Warrior and Factofile, they were both brilliant, and Factofile was beaten, but I don't think he lost a huge amount in defeat. Where I watched the race, I was at Punchestown, I was working for Racing TV, so I kind of, the Racing TV presentation stand, it's behind the stands, so I watched it on a screen at the races. Even from before the start, you could see that Paul Townend was lining up. Gaelic Warrior was going to go, and Paul said afterwards that he wanted to go, so he just let him go. He didn't really interfere with him, and he set up that lead. Like, I just think he was going too fast for the horses in behind. Those horses in behind, Johnny, they were a lot of them were making their season returns. A lot of them were competing over a trip that's a good bit short of their best. Like, it's 2 miles, 3.5 furlongs. It's not even 2.5 miles. And these are, as you said, Gold Cup horses, 3 mile horses. Leckie Watson, the Brown Advisory Chase winner. I know the way you're thinking, the Gold Cup winner. That's 3 miles, 2.5 furlongs. So it's different trips, and they're having their first runs. And if you look at the sectional times, like, Gaelic Warrior and Factofile, they were both a good bit faster than all the others through the final 4 furlongs of the race. They were over a second faster through the final furlong than everything else in the race. Wow. So it wasn't like they gave them an easy lead and then left it too late before they tried to close them down. And they were faster through the final sections of the race, even after setting up that advantage, that significant advantage through the early part of the race. But the Gaelic Warrior, when Factofile came up on his outside, he looked the winner. He traded at 1.05, so 20-1 on in running. Everybody thought, the market thought, he was going to go and win it. So for Gaelic Warrior to come back like he did, and for Paul Townend to keep a little bit in reserve.
Well, on that, actually, Don, because bear in mind, now, he's just after coming off an unbelievable ride in the
novice. And it was exactly as it goes. It's a very, very similar ride. Westport Cove, he looked beaten.
So what did the sectionals tell us about what Paul did on Gaelic Warrior in the race?
So he rode pretty much an exemplary race. The finishing speed was 101% of overall speed. So pretty much a very, very efficient race. Factofile, a little bit less efficient, had to make up his ground, but that's, you can see why he had to make up the ground on the outside, Mark Walsh, and he tried to make up the ground by expending as little energy as he could. But Gaelic Warrior, his final 4 furlongs were 61.64 seconds. Faster Slow, so Factofile was 60.57, so a little bit quicker. Faster Slow, who was next fastest, was 63.5, so nearly 2 seconds slower than Gaelic Warrior was through the final half a mile. And the final furlong, Gaelic Warrior was 15.66 seconds, Factofile 15.68, so almost identical. Faster Slow was next, 16.79, over a second slower. And he was next fastest. Hartwood was next at 17. So it was an unrelenting pace that was maintained by the two protagonists the whole way to the line. And look, they were both probably competing, Johnny, under optimum conditions. Mm. This kind of trip, definitely Gaelic Warrior, well, he won a bowl at Aintree over 3 miles and a furlong. You can argue that this kind of intermediate trip, right-handed, is ideal for him. Factofile, likewise, right, like his best performance, probably one of the best performances of all season last season, was his performance in winning the Ryanair Chase over the intermediate trip. And for the two of them to go toe-to-toe like that over the last two fences, to me, was brilliant. It was brilliant competition, brilliant sport. And for Gaelic Warrior to kind of wrest victory back out of the jaws of defeat and go on, like a horse who, he's an idiot, he's got his idiosyncrasies, doesn't he? Like, he's an enigmatic character. But for him to show that willingness and that drive to get back up and win the race by a neck from Factofile, the two of them miles clear of the rest, for me, it was just a hell of a horse race.
It was, without a doubt, one of the races of the ages, like of the century, really, that'll stick in your mind. And, you know, most people probably had backed one or the other. So they were invested basically gate to wire, as they say, notwithstanding just wallowing the virtuosity of the jockeys and the horses. Amazing stuff. The one aspect I've explained, I just wasn't happy with the stewarding on the day. And the only jockey who came in was Sean Flanagan, who was riding the rank outside of Senecio, basically said he's about never travelled. I don't think optically it's a great look when you've horses beaten such massive distances, who are effectively some of the best horses of our generation. But that's for another day. Gaelic Warrior, if you owned him, and if you owned him now rather than trained him, because Willie will analyse that he had a hard race, would you be very, very tempted by the King George? Because I don't know about you, but I've always thought, and it's blindingly obvious to me, he's better right-handed.
Yeah, no, he is. Like, he jumps to his right, so you think he's going to be better right-handed. Now, I think that tendency is less now than it used to be.
Yeah.
And he's never been at his best at Leopardstown, and that probably accentuates the whole right-handed, left-handed thing. But yeah, like, he does jump a bit to his right. That said, he put up a massive performance in winning the bowl at Aintree under Patrick Mullins last April, and that's left-handed. But yeah, like, the King George, it looks like the race for him, like right-handed, 3 miles of Kempton. And that style of racing, Johnny, the kind of go-forward, prominent, aggressive style of racing, that's well-suited to Kempton. I know it's three miles, it's a longer trip, but you don't want to be too far back in a King George. It's very difficult to make ground. Those fences come at you like rat-a-tat down the back straight. It's difficult to make up ground between them. And like, if he gets into a similar rhythm, if he runs in the King George, which I presume he will, and if he gets into that rhythm again up front, or on at least prominent on the front end, then yeah, he could be a potent force there as well.
What horses have sort of impressed you in very early stages in the season, but with a view to the extravaganza in March? I mean, you mentioned the Navan Festival. We saw some spectacular performances, be it on the Monday. Copec de Bourges was that race meeting was switched to the Monday. Final Demand, the form of whose run at Cheltenham, comes to the fore in the Fighting Fifth. He seems spectacular, Don. It's almost like that time of year where you want to see these novices just do something amazing first time out. Both did they not?
They did. No, they really did. Like Final Demand was first, as he said. He was also second. He was on the Sunday, and then the Saturday meeting had switched to the Monday. Final Demand was brilliant. Like, his jumping, he was just so effortless, wasn't he? And accurate and efficient, and he just seemed to just breeze through his race, did everything easily. Look, he was a short price favourite. He was expected to do that, but you know, you still don't know. Hurdler going chasing, you don't know what all the reports were about, you know, and Willie Mullins said he's going to be a chaser. That's what he always was and always looked like he was going to be. But then to go and do it as effortlessly as he did. Then Copec de Bourges was a little bit different. He's a bit more kind of forward going and free going. And over the first fence, he made a bit of a mistake at the first fence and a slight mistake at the second. But after that, he rolled, he got into a lovely rhythm. Paul Tannen tried to anchor him in behind to get a lead. He could only get a lead until over the third or onto the fourth fence, the fence going away from the stands, and he pinged that, and then he's in front again. So yeah, I don't think you could have hoped for much more than he put up as well. I think they were, you know, both as good as each other. But Final Demand, he probably got more accolades, and maybe he did it more efficiently and more effortlessly. But I think Copec de Bourges, he's just a really exciting horse as well.
Yeah, as I get older, I get a little bit more. It's a bit more hard to kind of fall in love with all these things, like, you know, and you get a bit more cynical, and when you go racing, you fall into the trap maybe of, you know, it's my job or whatever, and you go along. But I don't know, there's something about Final Demand. He is the one for me, just the beauty of him, and even as a hurdler. And his form, as I say, Don, does tie in with one of the main protagonists in the Fighting Fifth. Let's start with that on Saturday. I have to say, I love this race, going back to the likes of Archibald Winners, you know, when Intersky Falcon used to run it. It's a flat 2 miles. It suits certain horses. And I dare say, Don, we haven't really had a renewal better than this, have we?
No. It's such an interesting race, Johnny. And like, in going through the race, I think you mentioned the top three, and they're obviously the three to concentrate on. Well, that said, the champion hurdle winner is in here as well, yeah. Golden Ace. So The top three in the market, like, they all have different questions to answer, don't they? Like, there's, first of all, Constitution Hill, he's the most obvious one of the questions to answer. Like, he fell in the champion hurdle, then he fell at entry in the entry hurdle, and then came over to Punchestown and just ran an abject race, just wasn't at the races at all. He did nothing right. So you have to allow him that. I think if he hadn't run at Punchestown, like, you can allow him his fall in the champion hurdle, you can allow him his fall in the entry hurdle, while he probably wasn't travelling as well in the entry hurdle as he was in the champion hurdle, you can allow him both those runs. And I think if he hadn't run at Punchestown, he'd be a lot shorter for this race than he is. But that Punchestown run, to me, that's more worrying than his two falls at Aintree and Cheltenham. That said, the vibes about him all week have been very good. Nicky Henderson's been very, very positive, very strong about him. And he did say that he rang Nicol de Bonneville, his rider, and asked him if he wanted to put a pacemaker in. And Nicol said no, he didn't want a pacemaker. So that kind of leads me to believe they might just let him roll along if he can. Then the main line is in there as well. And the main line has been supplemented. He could be a pace angle into it. But it wouldn't be surprising to see Nicol de Bonneville just keeping it simple and letting Constitution Hill go and roll. But it's going to be fascinating to see how he's going to get on. And then the new line, he's unbeaten. He's won his bumper in four hurdle races. He won the shallow hurdle last year at Newbury, a grade one. He won the Turner's hurdle at Cheltenham, a grade one, a very, very strong Turner's hurdle, in which he beat, as I said, the aforementioned Final Demand and the Yellow Clay, the second or third and second places respectively. But he's dropping down in trip. And the shallow hurdle winners are normally, it's normally a stamina race, isn't it? Like, normally those horses from the shallow hurdle, they've got a, until the new line came along, they had a poor record in the Turners. They were, nearly have a better record than the Albert Bartlett stepping up in trip to 3 miles. But then he won the Turners. He showed a lot of pace that day. But he's dropping back down to 2 miles now, having like his two best performances have been over 2.5. So, yeah, he has to prove that he can cope with that. And he has to prove as well that he can cope with a step out of novice company into open company. And then Anzadam, like, we just have no idea how good he is. He was very good in beating Calaconte at Ferry House back in November last year. And kind of after that race, I don't remember, Johnny, they kind of talked about maybe he could be a champion hurdle horse. He was kind of 40-1 for the champion hurdle, 33s, nearly. A little bit like the Greatwood Hurdle this year, Alexei, who won the Greatwood Hurdle, and, you know, he won it so impressively then, they're kind of thinking, maybe, you know, he's kind of 40-1, 33 for the champion hurdle. Anzadam was similar last year. And then he went to Nace and he won well there at long odds on. And suddenly he was a 10 or 12-1 for the champion. Then he missed it. So he's back now. And obviously, Lossie went to the Morgiana. He's coming on to the Fighting Fifth. Paul Tenen's gone over to ride him. And he just... like, we just don't know how good he could be. Like, he could be as good as these, he could be better, or he might just be just not be up to this level. But we'll find it all out hopefully on Saturday.
It really has everything, because as you say, even the two outsiders in the race have solid form. Golden Ace might be sort of forgotten about, but yeah, as you say, champion hurdle winner. And the other point then, Don, is you alluded to this in relation to tactics, you know. Anzadam is a typical authorised. He's a bit very, very free going at times. Constitution Hill has had such a botched preparation for anything, fall, flop. And this is in relation to a horse who's run, basically, he's run 5 times in the last 2 years, and two of them he didn't complete, and one of them he pretty much didn't complete. So he's a massive question to answer, albeit he can probably be ridden whatever way you want. But the new line, I mean, if this race is tactical and he manages to win it, he must be a hell of a racehorse.
Mm. Yeah, like he of them all, he's probably the most solid, isn't he? Like, he was such a good novice last year, and we know that the Turner's hurdle winners, they tend to be pacey horses. It tends to be it's kind of strange, because the Supreme Novice's hurdle is over 2 miles, but it's a stamina test over two. The Turner's is over 2.5, but it's a speed test over 2.5. And we know, you know, going back to whatever Istabak Hardy used to, the Turner's is a good pointer to the champion hurdle the following season. So you can see why the new line is popular. And Dan Skelton, he's having a hell of a season so far. So, you know, he's going to have him primed for this. So, yeah, you talk about price and drop. I'd have the new line in as favourite. Okay. I'd have him in front of Constitution Hill. I just think he's got fewer questions.
I thought McLean bet was 2s each of 3.
7-4 each of 3, Johnny.
Yeah, fair enough. I have no idea what's going to go off favourite. I have no idea what's going to go off second favourite. And isn't that a remarkable thing? You're saying the new line should be favourite. I don't know. I could see him going off favourite, but rarely do you get a race at this level where it's very, very hard to pick the front three in terms of the order.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. It really is. And, you know, maybe there'll be market vibes on Saturday morning or on Saturday closer to the time that will kind of skew it one way or the other. But, yeah, like when the 5 days were in for this earlier in the week, I just hoping they'd all be declared, which they were. And yeah, so it's, yeah, we're going to find out. To me, it's not a race to a betting. It's a race to watch and learn from, and we should learn plenty.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And people who don't really, I suppose, who don't get horse racing, maybe don't understand that this race will take place over 4 minutes. The market is almost as fascinating. Like, what happens in the betting is so compelling, because as much as the betting ring isn't what it was, there could be a wild drift among the three horses here. You just don't know. With the question marks over Constitution Hill, and as much as the market always seems to get it pretty much right, so whatever will go off favourite, you'll massively respect that horse, and it wouldn't be amazing at all if one of these went off 7-2. That's what's so compelling about it. And then you have the race itself, and you get sucked in as a gambler to a horse who's on the drift, which is, you know, one of the most difficult things in gambling is when you've missed the price, do you still back the horse in horse racing? And by contrast, when the horse is drifting, do you back him or her? Anyway, before we get to Sam Norris and William Hill shortly, we've got to go to Newbury, Don, for the 255, the Coral Gold Cup Handicap, a race that we all know and love. Monty Starr, who's fresh from running behind Galvin de Champagne last seen, is top weight. Lots of Irish runners in this. Blizzard of Oz is really interesting for me. I tipped the horse that he beat at Wexford last time. He's a good horse, Rocky's Diamond. What's your take on this? Is this the type of race, I know you tip horses, is this the type of race you'd like to get involved in?
Yeah, it's a big betting race, Johnny. Yeah, no, it's a big handicap, and as you say, like what an Irish hand going over, like as you said, Blizzard of Oz. Who I was with you on Rocky's Diamond actually at Wexford. I thought and still think that he's a horse from whom we're going to hear a good bit more. Declan Queeley's horse, but Blizzard of Oz is in there. JJ7 riding him. Spanish Harlem, the Kerry National winner, Danny Mullins, who rode him there, rides him again, and he's up 16 pounds. So it's a big ask. But it was a big performance by him in winning the Kerry National. So Willie Mullins sending him over. Percival Le Galwa in here for Gavin Cromwell, and Keith Donoghue having his first run since he fell in the Grand National, which, you know, it was a long way out, but it was a shame that he fell. But he's gone over. 3-card brag for Gordon Elliott, who won at Cheltenham last time. Jordan Gainford and him, Intense Raffles, Tom Gibney's Irish Grand National winner. Ben Bromley on board him, actually. We haven't seen him since he ran at Clonmel there a few weeks ago. And Monty Starr, yeah, like, it's a lot of weight, isn't it? 12 stone in a Hennessy or in a Coral Gold Cup. But like he's a Grade One horse, Monty Starr. He had a bit of a setback early last season, didn't he? And he didn't quite fulfil the expectations that I think Connections had from, as well as the general public. But like he ran in the Gold Cup, he didn't run badly in the Irish Gold Cup either. Back in February when he finished fifth behind Gallop in the Shop, so there's a chance that he'll be up to giving away the weight. And then of the English, you've got Mertan in there. Like he was so good in winning the Ultima Chase at Cheltenham. And he's a horse who, like Cheltenham and Newbury, they're very different tracks, but he seems to be adept at different tracks. He's a lot higher in the handicap. He's 15 pounds higher in the handicap than he was then, but he won with plenty in hand. So it wouldn't be surprising to see him go well again. And he hasn't had a run this season, but Lucinda Russell has said that this was his time. In fact, even after he won the Ultima at Cheltenham, she said he could be a horse for the Coral Gold Cup. And here he is on Coral Gold Cup day, going well. And I think Katate Dory is a really interesting horse for Sam Thomas. He was really impressive in winning the Kempton race, the old Racing Post Chase. It's now the Ladbrokes Trophy, back in February when he won with any amount in hand. He's a lot higher in the handicap now than he was then. Again, he's 12 pounds higher. And he was pulled up at Cheltenham in the race that Mertan won, but he's never been at his best at Cheltenham. He's run at Cheltenham 3 times now, and he's disappointed in all 3 times. He ran over hurdles at Aintree on his debut this season. It was a pretemps qualifier, and he finished 7th of 7, so that doesn't look good. But he ran much better than that. It was a race in which the hurdles in the home straight were all taken out because of the low sun, and he was right there with them, bypassing the second last imposed twa. Actually, he won that race. And Katate Dore, that Sam Thomas said that run was to bring him forward for the Coral Gold Cup, and here he is on Coral Gold Cup day. And Sam Thomas, he's had a really good start to the season as well. His horses are running really well. He's got good strike rate too. So yeah, I can see Katate Dore going well.
It's mad as well. Like, you even a mare by Canford, Cliff's Panic Attack, who is probably going to go off around about 10-1, which it's definitely not bred for this sort of test, but comes in with the penalty from the win at Cheltenham. I'd actually even mention, like, some of the horses at massive prices. Moon d'Orange, he's a horse who maybe has a bit of a story left in him, and more from a kind of a story point of view. Sean Cleary Farrell getting the ride on a penny 100. Again, she's not a bad horse in her day. She's one of the lower weights in the race. The last Irish winner of this was Total Recall, who was a switch to Willie Mullins, having won at the Munster National at Limerick, and won this in dramatic circumstances. But it's a hell of a race. And very shortly now, we're going to go to Sam Norris from William Hill.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill, 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
We are joined now by Sam Norris, our sponsor, William Hill, and across the big one at Newbury tomorrow, if you want to have a wager each way, William Hill is a quarter of the odds, a fifth. So a quarter of the odds, a fifth. That's a pretty big incentive. And the amount of times you back a horse to finish, I don't know, each way who finishes fifth when you've four places, fourth when you've three, and so on and so forth. So maybe you'll back a horse tomorrow who will finish sixth. And to be fair, Sam, it is that type of race. You could make a case for 10 of them. None of them finishes in the first 10.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that as well. Saves me from banging on about it. But yeah, we do like to enhance the fraction as well as the places. Obviously, it's a bit of a throwback. Once upon a time, quarter was the standard, wasn't it? The industry's gone away from that a little bit. But yeah, we do give punters a bit of a chance most weeks by enhancing the fraction and the place terms on certain races. And as you say, it's a really good renewal of this race, actually. 5-1 the field at the moment. Meyer Town tops the betting with us. Very impressive winner of the Ultima when last seen. Lucinda Russell and Michael Scudamore going really well at the moment. So no surprise to see him popular. We've had a good spread of business on the race generally, betting-wise. The Doyen Chief is marginally our worst result at the moment. He's 10 from 16 to 1. Nothing we're too concerned about. There's also been bits and pieces for Gorgeous Tom and O'More Park. But yeah, really good renewal. As you say, you've got the extra place elements. And of course, with Racing Bet Builder here at William Hill, if you do fancy kind of three or four horses to run well, rather than having the three or four each way singles, you can perm them all up in the same bet and maybe bet three or four of them to finish top three, top four, top five, top six, even top seven with Racing Bet Builder. So this type of race looks ripe for that particular product. A new thing we've rolled out over the last couple of weeks. But yeah, well up to scratch renewal. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it feels like racing's trying to latch on to football here. Bet builders have become unbelievably big. Like, who would have thought that somebody would want to guess how many corners would be in a match, what time such a guy would get booked, and who would score last and all of this? But they do. They actually do. Don, is it okay to get a bet builder of three horses against the field for you here at the likely prices? Is that okay to ask?
Yeah. So bet builder, does it work in the same race, Sam? You can put horses in the same race or across different races? Same race?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So you can play multiple horses in the same race, all to finish in the top. As I said, I think we've got 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 with a field as big as this. The prices don't go live until the day of the race, actually. So I couldn't tell you a price for this race at the moment. But yeah, you can combine them in the same race.
Yeah, no, I'd put Katata Dori in there for sure. I think Gorgeous Tom could run well. And he's a horse who was probably racing over a trip short of his best the last day against Firefox. And he ran well in the Brand Advisory Chase. Remember, he's the horse that finished off really strongly in the Drinmore Chase last year, Henry de Rumhead's horse, and finished fourth in the end, but he was only beaten a length in the Drinmore Chase, so I'd stick him in as well. And I'd probably just stick Monty Starr in as well.
Cool.
Because he's got the class, and off a big weight, it's maybe hard to see him winning the race, but I can see him running well and maybe running into a place.
Yeah, keep an eye on the bet filler. So, like, it's basically all these kind of nerdy models where geniuses can come up with these odds, and it's been an amazing success in football. One of the true innovations in gambling that's been kind of a cool thing in recent years. The Fighting Fifth, Sam. This has everything. If you're the proverbial gun to the head, who goes off favourite, and who goes off favourite, and who do you fancy actually?
I think Constitution Hill might go our favourite. I think once we take the bulk of the money tomorrow, which, you know, obviously we talk about the markets as they are, you know, today. But Saturday is when you get the vast majority of the cash comes into the market. I think with his name, with his reputation, with his perhaps popularity amongst the once a week punters as opposed to the day to day bettors, I think he'll be the one who goes off Fav. He's our worst result in the book at the moment. We briefly went top price 2-1 yesterday. That was gobbled up really quickly. We have seen good money for Amsterdam as well. He's obviously the kind of dark one in the race. He was entered in the Morgana, didn't he? Didn't run. But he's been pretty strong in the betting. It'd be a bit of a surprise if he went off Fav, but he's been shortened into 9-4, and he's not that far off the other two. The New Lion's the current favourite in our book at 7-4. I think he's the safest option. Loves to see Constitution Hill get back to his best. Obviously, I think, you know, everyone from a neutral standpoint, bets aside, would love to see that. Amsterdam is a dark one, but he just hasn't, you know, proven himself at the top level as of yet. So I think the New Lion is is the safe bet. And it's weird that we're giving no love to the reigning champion hurdler, isn't it? Golden Ace. Like, nobody's talking about her as if she's got any chance. I know she was, you know, a bit fortuitous in winning the champion hurdle last year, but how often would you have a champion hurdler going off 22-1 for the following year's fighting fifth? I mean, she was disappointing on her comeback run, to be fair, but, you know, she adds a little bit of something else in the race. So, yeah, I would expect Constitution Hill to go favourite. I think betting-wise, for safety, I would go for the new line.
Yeah, and that's the bad thing about a race like this as well. Just as you kind of alluded to with the market, Sam, it has to be some level of insider information, because we don't really none of these horses has run yet this season. What's the work been like at home? And there'll probably be maybe one negative in relation to this horse is working a bit freely, or he could come on for the run, so on and so forth. So much to look forward to. I'm having massive problems with my Wi-Fi here, but we will move on. I'm going to need your help here a bit, guys, in relation to Sunday's card at Fairy House. We will start with the Hatton's Grace. This is a cracking contest. Might be a match, Sam. May not be necessarily a match if Willie Mullins can work his magic with one of the very well-bred horses in the race. How do they bet it?
Yeah, we've got Tipu, clear favourite actually at 10 to 11. He's been a fair bit more popular than Ballyburn actually since the market opened. Ballyburn's 13 to 8. We've laid a lot more Tipu of the two. I guess, Johnny, this is the plan for Tipu, right? This, you know, he's obviously won the race twice before. He's been teed up for it. Is it a bit more of an afterthought for Ballyburn?
Yeah, I'll bring you in on that, Don. Like, Tiopu, I fancied Tiopu in the race last year. Maybe he ran into one, but I was actually disappointed in him. But I just feel with Gordon's horses the way they are, you know, this is the race that he goes for. And he's probably one of the most reliable horses in training. The more rain that falls, the better. But it will be, it's yielding soft, I think, at the moment. I just don't know where I stand with Ballyburn, Don. Let's give us a bit of help on this one.
Yeah, I'm like that. I'm jury out on Ballyburn. I think he has to prove it. It's very difficult to come back over fence. Look, he's such a talented hurdler two seasons ago, and he was all the rage. He was, you know, one of the most high-profile horses in training last season, but it didn't really happen for him over fences, and we know all that's been well-documented. So, but in his favour, Willie Mullins did say quite early that he was going back over hurdles. So whether this is a starting point for him into the season, or whether he's going to be as fit as he's going now, as he's going to be later in the season, who knows? But Tiapu, yeah, like he's won, as Sam was saying, he's won two Hatton's Grace hurdles last year. He was beaten by Lossie Mouth, who, as we know, was top class, unyielding ground in a race in which they didn't go a great pace. So the ground's going to be softer. I'm sure there'll be a stronger pace. So for me, he's the one to beat. And the Gordon Elliott horses there in flying for me, that four timer there last weekend, as well as Hoodoo going over and winning at Ascot. Mystical Power is a fascinating horse in here. Like, he's just a bit of a forgotten horse. I presume he's the well-bred horse that you alluded to.
Yeah, but I tipped him up in the stairs hurdle, Don. And to be fair, Everton was actually going quite nicely for him. And then he did genuine excuse for pulling up. I wouldn't be giving up on him yet.
You know, on this day last year, he ran in the Fighting Fifth hurdle. Mm. He was sent off as joint favourite with Sir Gino for the Fighting Fifth hurdle, 6-5 each of two, which is quite incredible now, given their respective paths since then. But and then he was disappointing there. He was disappointing at Leopardstown as well, and then, as you say, pulled up in the stairs hurdle. So he's got unfinished business. I think he's a little bit of a forgotten horse. It's a big ask to see, you know, for him to go and beat Tiapu and Ballyburn, for that matter, in effectively Tiapu's race. This is the race that Tiapu was made for, as long as the ground is soft. But I could see him it'd be nice to see him bouncing back to form, given his breeding and given his profile this time last year.
The Royal Bond, Sam, Love Me Tender has been put in short here. I'm not so sure about that myself, given the depth of the opposition. And this is a race that can, for me, and we can definitely unveil vulnerable favourites year after year. How do you bet it?
Yeah, Love Me Tender, as you say, is the fav. But it's been a touch uneasy. We put him up 11 to 10 originally. He's just eased out a touch to 11 to 8 now. Cocktail Brute has been shortened up a little bit, the second in 5-1 into 9-2. And at bigger odds, little nibbles for a couple of big prices. Scope to Improve, 25-1 into 20-1. And the Passing Wife, 25-1 into 20-1 as well. But obviously there's a bit of a question mark over the form of the Gavin Cromwell Yard at the moment. So, yeah, Love Me Tender, the fab, but a little bit uneasy. I only realised today that this race had lost its Grade 1 status. Did that happen this year or last year?
I think it is this year. Was it last year, Don?
Last year, yeah. I think it was Grade 2 last year for the first time, I think, yeah.
What are you liking it, Don?
I like Love Me Tender. Like you couldn't not like what he did at Tipperary in the Grade 3 hurdle. And actually, Whimsy, whom he beat like really well, was she didn't run badly in the Ferochian hurdle next time. So his jumping was just so good. And, you know, kind of at the time I was thinking, geez, you know, this horse could be, he could be better than a summer jumper. Well, look at him now, he's favourite for the Royal Bond.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, he's a really likeable horse. Each to their own, well-regarded horse of Barry Connell's, who was good in winning at Galway the last day. Cocktail Brew was good in beating Kilkennan there last week. So it's a good Royal Bond. Yeah, it's a good Royal Bond. It is a bit of a shame that it's lost its Grade 1 status, because it was always good to have the three Grade 1 races on the day. But yeah, it might get it back if this renewal lives up to expectation.
Last of the Grade 1s then, yeah, on last of the two Grade 1s on Sunday is the Drinmore. I'll start with you on this, Don. What price would you be expecting Romeo Coolio to go off? I still feel this horse could be a threat in the Arkle division, and we know he'll run in the 2 mile division at Cheltenham because of the nature of the programme. Now he takes on Old Man Dinkle and Gold Dancer, who's already raised 153. Mm-hmm. Romeo Coolio, Don, when he ran it down Royal Day, a lot of the fences were kind of omitted that day, but I thought he was quite breathtaking, actually.
Yeah, no, I thought he was very good, and it's a pity that all the fences weren't in, because you would have liked to have seen him complete all fences and do what he did. But I thought it was actually a negative for him that the fences were taken out, because the jumping was so good over the ones that were in. But look, again, in fairness, Gordon Elliott always said this fellow was a chaser in the making as well. He was such a good hurdler last season, a novice hurdler. He won the Grade 1 at Leopardstown over Christmas, and then he ran a massive race in the Supreme Novices Hurdle, in a really strong Supreme Novices Hurdle, to finish third behind Cupac Dubourg and William Money. So, yeah, and then at Down Royal, again, you couldn't have hoped for much more than he did. His jumping was so good. It was 2.5 miles, and he won as easily as he wanted. So, and the Drinmore chase as well, it's Gordon Elliott's race, isn't it? He farms it, he does really well in it, he's got a brilliant record in it. I think his first Grade 1 actually was in this race, Jesse's Dream, going way back. So you can be sure that Romeo Cooley will have had the Drinmore on his radar for quite some time. But I like Gold Dance. Like, look, you mentioned Old Man Dingle, Johnny. It's great that Owen Griffin is a horse going here, and he fully deserves to take his chance in it. He was good at Cork the last day in getting the better of you. I don't know, the width of the track kind of separated them. He was on the near side, but he was always getting the upper hand. That was a Grade 3 race, so absolutely deserves his chance in a Grade 1. He wouldn't want the ground to be too soft. But Gold Dancer, his jumping was so good the last day at Tipperary. Like, he stayed on well at Galway to beat Westport Cove, and Westport Cove has gone and enhanced that form quite spectacularly since then. And then he went to Tipperary, and his jumping was very, very good. He was out in front from a long way out, and he won really impressively from Down Mexico Way, who came out and won a handicap at Goran Park next time. So that form was enhanced. He's had 4 runs over fences, so it's probably a good level of experience for a novice at this time of the year.
That's important.
But he's progressive as well. Yeah, he's progressive as well, and I think he could put it up to Romeo Coolio over this trip, over 2.5 miles.
We're going to wrap shortly, Sam. If you have time as well, can we get betting for the Arkle, just if we were wanting one of those bets for the first day of the festival come March? Because I do like, maybe like this Cupac Dubourg could be sensational, but Romeo Coolio, he looks almost like a bulletproof horse with his Cheltenham record as well, to kind of be in the first three and run a big race. Can we get betting on that, and also betting on the Grade 1 on Sunday, Sam?
Yeah, we'll start with the race coming up on Sunday. I very much echo a lot of Don's sentiments there, in the sense that I think Gold Dancer is quite a nice price given Westport Cove's boosted the form. He has experience on his side versus Romeo Coolio. But what I will say is Romeo Coolio has been really well supported this week at an odds on price. He was kind of 8-11 when we first went live. Now, odds on prices middle of the week for a race on Sunday, where you have to bet obviously under anti-post rules, are not usually super popular with the punters. They'll just tend to wait for the day of the race. The price is going to be similar anyway. But the fact that Romeo Coolio has been backed, you know, Wednesday, Thursday at an odds on price of 8-11 is maybe quite revealing, given the confidence perhaps behind the horse. And then as for the Arkle, he's 8-1 at the moment in our book for the Arkle. Cupac Dubourg 5-7-4. Lou Lamber second in at 4-1. Obviously, we had that wonderful Monday, didn't we, last week, where they both made their chase debut. You're not going to get too many Mondays like that. They're the only three in a single figure price at the moment. Cupac, Lou Lamber, Romeo is the order we have them in.
So, right, let's wrap. So I think the best winner I ever had, Don, was in a 6 furlong race, and it was a low grade race, but the horse was a big price, and it got me thinking. and I've reinvested the money, namely squandered the money since, but it was like you can make so much money potentially in a race that takes place over a little over a minute, and that's the beauty of racing. Like, you can have a life changing win, be it in a Cume or be it on, you know, a horse at a big price or something like that, and racing has that magical ability to make you dream, and that's what I suppose that's what life is about as well, having a dream, something to look forward to. Is your charity tipped on? Is it going to be at a life changing price? Is it going to be a bet builder, or is it going to be a conventional, I fancy something at 2-1 for Sam to give me a price? But over to you, what's your tip for the weekend for the charity?
I think we'll stick with Catatadori in the Carroll Gold Cup. Yeah, I think he's a reasonable price. I don't know what price William Hill or Sam is, but it should be around 9 or 10 to 1. I think, as we discussed earlier on, I think he's got lots in his favour. His Kempton win was really impressive. He's £12 higher now than he was then, but he's warmed up for this nicely with a good run over hurdles at Aintree. The St. Thomas horses are in good form. The track should suit him well. He goes well on a flat track, and he stays well. So yeah, I think he could go fairly well in the Carroll Gold Cup.
What price are we, Sam?
I give you 12 to 1, Don. Even better.
That'd be fairer than that.
Beautiful. And yeah. from both of you, Anthony, let's look forward to from the weekend from you first, Sam.
The other horse I'm somewhat interested in this weekend, 3:35 race at Newbury, Javar Allen, has been quite well backed, 11-2 into 9-2. I think he might be one of the plays of the day. He'd probably be close to that material for me. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing him go in the 3:35.
Thanks for your time, Sam.
Thanks, chaps.
I have Sam Norris from William Hill. A horse I'd suggest keeping an eye out for, Attaboy Charlie, who's an 8-year-old going on 9, who's never won a race, runs in the Lady Handicap Riders Steeplechase. That's the first race Sunday. He's ridden by his owner, I think, whose last winner, I have to think I was there that day, but her last winner was in 2019, Emma Sweeney. So I think she basically rides the horses that she owns herself or that she has an involvement in. Now, she's riding Attaboy Charlie in that first race, warmed up for this with a sort of a nondescript run at a big price lately at Fairy House. Although I do very much feel that was a means to an end. This horse is going to be a biggish price in the Lady Amateur Riders, the Lady Riders Steeplechase 1205. Now, keep an eye out for Where's Frankie as well under Georgie Benson, who's a horse who kind of has the same sort of prep. He went to Fairy House for essentially a prep run lately. Also trained by Carl Thornton, Georgie Benson takes off 7. Keep an eye out as well in the race for Jodie Townend riding Solomon Lane for the excellent Martin Hassett. But at a decent price, I quite like Attaboy Charlie in the 12:05 at Fairy House. Over to you, Don, for the last couple of horses to look out for the weekend.
Yeah, look, the Portishead Handicap, that's always a good race on the Saturday as well, on the Sunday as well at Fairy House. Now as the air could be one for that, but I think that the quality of the racing, Johnny, like the grade ones, the Fighting Fifth Hurdle is probably the most interesting race of the whole weekend. It's going to be fascinating to see how that pans out, and the Hatton's Grace Hurdle as well, and the Dunmore Chase. Like, I just think it's a brilliant weekend of National Hunt racing. I'm looking forward to seeing how it all pans out.
It's spectacular. What are you writing about the Sunday time, Sunday?
Yet to be decided, but yeah, we have it almost in the can.
Wow, that's a very good editor. It's 10-2 on a Friday, and you still have to 10-2 on a Friday, and you're still deciding. That's quite glorious, actually. Don, it's brilliant having you on.
Yes, Johnny.
That was Don McLean. You can check out Don in the Sunday Times and every Sunday, and he's also on Racing TV. And this weekend on Racing TV, yeah, we have just the best action. Newcastle then is on Sky Sports Racing, and if you happen to be bedridden or couch bound for the next couple of days, it could be worse. It could be worse. This Fighting Fifth is going to be one for the absolute superlatives and of the ages. Let's see what goes off favourite, and let's see what goes off in front. That was The Racing Pod. JD will be back next week.
The Racing Pod.
On Off The Ball.
With William Hill. 18+. See gamblingcare.ie.